Welcome back, everyone. I'm Brad Rieger. I have the privilege of being your host today, and I've had the privilege for several seasons, and we are you're joining us for another session of A Basic Conversation.
I think we've done 40 or more of these podcasts.
Yes, we're approaching that, yes. Maybe not all of them published yet, because we do.
And my sister who listens, I says, you'll never run out.
Right. And once again, we have our great leader and coordinator here, Chris, WGTE.
He's the best.
Yes, and we couldn't do this without you, Chris. So thank you for what you do for our podcast and all the other audio great offerings here at WGTE. We really, really appreciate you and your expertise. Speaking of appreciating and expertise and impact, we're going to be talking today about Reinhold Niebuhr, a teacher of social ethics, just a great thinker. And where should we start?
I don't really know, but we better do a little history of him. He was the son of a pastor in the evangelical tradition. He was ordained in that, and he took a position up in Detroit, Michigan, at the Bethel Evangelical Church as the pastor. And he was there about 12 years, and it was a formative period for him. He was very involved in social justice questions, and he took on, of all people, Henry Ford.
Not a lightweight.
For sure, especially in Detroit. And he was interested in the plight of the workers, the assembly line workers. I'm not so sure how much he really understood that, but he became a spokesperson for them and saying, you know, they needed to be treated better. They needed unemployment compensation and dealing with injuries on the job. He thought it was tedious, terrible work on the assembly line. And so he took on that. He wrote a lot about it. He gave lectures and speeches. He drew big audiences. But it didn't work, which is an important point. He didn't move for, he didn't get Henry Ford to be nicer to his workers at all. And he learned from that something about power, that you couldn't get the Henry Fords of this world to do better by telling them they should be practice Christian charity. That isn't going to work. There's a power question. You have to deal with people like Henry Ford with power, and otherwise you can't convince them to do anything. So that and during that time, Niebuhr was very much a socialist and a pacifist, he became so well known that way that he got an offer to teach in New York at Union Theological Seminary. He went to Yale and he got a master's degree in divinity, but he never got his doctorate. Niebuhr became the most famous theologian in the history of the United States. He never had a doctorate, but he taught at a prestigious school, Union Theological, in New York. And he did there for, he went there in 1928 and stayed there for until he had a terrible stroke. I was there in 1967, taking classes at Union Theological. And at that time, Niebuhr, who was officially retired, was still holding seminars in his apartment. And I was invited to come.
What was that like?
And I missed the opportunity.
You missed it.
I tell my students all the time, don't miss opportunities. I've done that a couple times in my life. I don't know that I really know why. Maybe I didn't recognize his importance. I know I was very involved in my own classes, I was a very studious approach to all of that. But I didn't go, so I missed a great opportunity. Otherwise, we'd be sitting here, and I'd say, yeah, well, Reinie said when I was in his seminar.
But you were buried somewhere in the library, right?
That's right,
Let's say that.
Making a bad judgment. Anyway. So he taught at Union for years, and he evolved over time. And that's probably where we would have to try to get to. He put away his pacifist tendencies. He became, and he sort of disavowed much of socialism in many ways. So he developed what came to be known as Christian realism. In other words, you can't deal with Henry Ford with love. You have to deal with him with power. So that became an important part of his whole outlook. So the Second World War, he supported the U.S. effort. He supported the U.S. entering the war, and that he drove away a lot of his socialist friends and so on. But he was logic of Christian realism is that original sin is a vital doctrine. He used to say that original sin is the one empirically verifiable Christian doctrine. That is, we all know we're not okay. We all know that we have tendencies that aren't helpful, that there's demonic forces in the world. We all know that. And so he was big on original sin. And in that way, there was sort of a connection with the Catholic community, which talked about that. He was very influenced by Augustine. Augustine was always the one who was a realist and knew that we had problems in the world, there were counter forces and so on. And so Niebuhr played off of that, and he would say things like, there's no perfect justice in the world. We can't make the world a perfect place. He was at first influenced by movements within the Protestant world, is what they called the social gospel. Walter Rauschenbusch and other things were pushing the social gospel. And what that meant for them was that we could, if we got it right, we could create the kingdom on this earth. You know, if we got race right and pacifism right and so on, we could create the kingdom on this earth. And Niebuhr just blasted that. He says, we can't create the kingdom on this earth. The best we might shoot for is what he called proximate justice. Proximate justice. Never going to have a totally just world. Never going to have a totally peaceful world. He constantly chided Christians who were utopian, you know. And that's how he saw pacifism. Well, just follow Jesus, put away the sword, and we'll be okay. And he said, well, we won't be okay. It doesn't work like that. That's the world is shaped by individuals and by original sin. So one of his books was Moral Man, Immoral Society. So he said that individually we might do okay, but when we're in groups where there's trouble, we're seeing that today, reinforces silos. We live in silos, and we keep hearing certain memes repeated over and over, and it becomes like truth in some ways. And so and of course the biggest group of all are nations. So the people most prone, the world most prone to get it wrong, to fall under the sway of original sin, would be large countries. And so he said, my country, right or wrong, during the Vietnam War, was verboten to him. You can't ever say my country, right or wrong. The cross remains judge of the flag for Niebuhr. And so you have to watch groups, and you get what we call group think. So you're together with other people who think like you do, and you keep repeating it, and there's no critique. So he always thought the gospel had to be a critique of culture. It had to say no at times to national policy and so on. But out of that framework, he moved in many different directions. So he supported World War II. Why? Because it would be worse if Hitler took over the world. Right. It was always for him, you had to weigh out the good and the bad that's going on. So you had to have a calculus, and you always had to make concrete decisions. He said, we can't sit back and say, well, it's too complicated, I can't deal with it. He's a great voice for today in many ways, you know. America First thing, I know that Niebuhr would be very critical of that, America First. You can't ever give that much power to a country. Religion is a critique of that, and Christianity is a critique of that. So that, yeah.
One of the things about Christian realism, he talks about the theology of the cross as being that helps ground us with the challenges of life.
Yeah, he didn't like this sugary Christianity and everything's nice and we'll all get along and kumbaya. Bad words about that. He didn't like that at all. And the cross is part of the Christian message. And the cross is Jesus going to the cross, he did it freely, you know. But the cross was a sign of the Roman effort to dominate the world. It was an exercise of power by the Sadducees who wanted to get rid of Jesus. It was an exercise of power of Pilate, the Roman Empire that occupied the Holy Land. So Jesus was, in a sense, the willing victim of power. And so the cross becomes a sign of that you have to try to be faithful within a world that's going to be tempt you in other ways.
Mm. Was Niebuhr involved at all in the just war theory?
He said at times that he didn't like that. And
he didn't like that, being associated, or didn't like that just war?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I have a memory that it wasn't his way of thinking about it. But I'm really not sure of that. It doesn't fit in with most of the things that he said over a period of time. But power, yeah. So World War II, after World War I, there was strong pacifist movement in the United States, strong socialist movement. And a lot of Christian utopianism. When World War II came up, he looked at the overall situation and said, if Hitler takes over the world, it's going to be worse. Yeah. And there's always tragedy. I mean, war, you can have the best intentions in war and civilians are going to die. Or even you kill your opponent, you've killed somebody. The world is tragic. And we have to live in that kind of world. So he is supported. He said, the United States should support the Allies. We should enter the war. And he was all for that, yeah.
And Niebuhr was also all for staying engaged in the political process and not withdrawing.
Exactly, yeah. He says, while the answer might not be clear and there's ambiguity in everything, the worst thing to do is stand off and do nothing. Christians can't do that. That's not an option. And we're going to see that in our election now. Some people say, well, I don't like the candidates, you know, and therefore I'm not going to vote. Niebuhr would be totally against that. He said, you have to make a judgment about which candidate would be worse. You know?
Right.
And so you often have to choose the lesser of two evils.
You know, I was reading about, and it still ties in with this Christian realism, this idea that all human realities have ambiguity and there's paradoxes and there's this tension of good and evil. And I was struck by, over the years that I've read your writings and also heard you preach, that you a lot of times frame things that way.
Yeah.
And you call it, it's not exactly the same, but you call it hopeful realism.
I did, yes, yeah. But the realism was part of it, right? I often talked about dialectical virtues, and one was hopeful realism. And often it's realism. I mean, I always use the example of the person with a gambling problem. They can't do anything about it until they admit, I got a gambling problem. And once you're realistic about, I got an alcohol problem or a gambling problem or whatever it is, then we have possibility of improvement. Can't get any place until you first admit that. Yeah. I was thinking of his relationships with the people. Martin Luther King is a great example. Martin Luther King once said that he was influenced by Gandhi's nonviolence, but he was more influenced by Niebuhr's realism. So, and we'll just stay with King for a while. In the letter to the Birmingham jail, when King didn't have any books and wrote this great letter, he references Niebuhr. And it's the thing, that what he references is that Niebuhr's idea that the collective is more likely to be immoral than the individual. And therefore, we have to look. You know, I was just thinking back when Niebuhr was in Detroit, the Ku Klux Klan was very big in Detroit. It was a large Klan movement and population in Detroit. And so that's one of the groups he took on, and he saw that as evil personified. I mean, this was original sin out of control and needed. That's why, for him, Christian realism was the only way to attack it or deal with it, and you had to use power. Back to Martin Luther King, the whole idea of black power was involved with Niebuhr's idea. Niebuhr said the oppressor is not going to give privilege or advantage or justice to the oppressed. They have to have power to gain it.
There's limitations to reason and appealing to someone's moral conscience.
Well said. Limitations to reason and to what Christian charity can do. Yeah. So we have to work for proximate justice. So that's another element of King's movement, that this realization of establishing black power so that they can force, in a way. Oh, yeah, he was in the Selma march that King had. He invited Niebuhr to come and march, because he was inviting all of the clergy of the North to come and help with that. And I know some of my friends heard that call and marched at Selma. And Niebuhr sent back a telegram saying, I totally support the movement, but I've had a stroke and I'm not able to participate. I'm sorry, but he was totally supportive of the Selma march. It's, again, you had to find a power that would challenge the entrenched segregation, and so that became a way of. Of course, Niebuhr was very happy with the civil rights movement and where that went. Another way he supported Martin Luther King was in opposing the Vietnam War. So, supported World War II, opposed the Vietnam War, and again he thought that that was doing more harm than good. You weren't going to accomplish anything through that war. Nothing good was going to permanent was going to come out of it, and therefore we shouldn't be in that war. So he strongly supported Martin Luther King in that movement to oppose the Vietnam War.
One of the things that your book, Contemporary Theologians, when you write about Niebuhr, is that this phrase caught me, and it's kind of captured what you're saying. Niebuhr stressed the importance of greater emphasis on establishing justice versus a community of love.
Yeah.
That's a strong statement. Given the greatest commandment is to...
Yeah, he went against the grain of his early positions and pacifism and so on. But that was part of him. He just feared utopianism.
Yeah.
He thought that we're not going to get a hearing. Christians are not going to get a hearing in the United States by telling Congress people they should love one another. You know, his idea was that we need to make our arguments and so on, but we have to have a way of backing it up. That's why voting is so important. In other words, if we don't like what some of our elected people say about political issues, policy questions, so on, we should we have voting power. We have power. You know, another thing I'm thinking about is pride. For him, the great sin was pride, and pride is what gets in our way personally. But it's even worse when you got groups like the Ku Klux Klan were guilty of pride, that they were the people who knew what was right racially and so on. They were going to use violence and segregation to attack the African Americans in the United States. So, and I know, I remember one woman critiquing Niebuhr. He always talked about pride. Pride is the great sin. And she said, Niebuhr doesn't understand. My problem is not pride. My problem is not being self-assertive enough, not loving myself enough. So there's a definite critique that comes out of the feminist world of Niebuhr's stress on pride getting in the way.
He also warned about spiritual pride.
Spiritual
pride.
Yeah.
Like my God is with me, or my religion's better than you, or my thoughts are better than yours.
God is on our side. Yeah. He feared that kind of talk. Yeah. I mean, so much of the Christian world today and political rhetoric says God's on our side, and he warned against that.
Yeah. Oh, one of the things that I found interesting as we led up to this conversation is that he wrote a famous prayer that showed up in other parts of society, and that prayer is, God, give us the grace to accept the serenity of the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things that should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish one from another.
Yeah, there's a lot of dispute about who wrote that prayer, but in my studies of Niebuhr, I became convinced that it was his prayer. He wrote it, I believe, he was giving a lecture, and it was before he was being introduced and so on, he scribbled a prayer on a piece of paper, and I think it was that prayer. So the idea and the serenity, AA has picked it up, all the 12-step programs have picked it up. That is another way that he is influenced, yeah. So his idea, we have to accept what we can't change. We should change what we can. And then we need wisdom to see the difference, to know which is which.
It's a great frame of reference how to live.
Just in life, yeah. But I say again, it grew out of his sense of realism, of original sin. So another person he was very influenced by him was Barack Obama, President Obama. When I would listen to Obama's speeches and knowing a little bit about Niebuhr, I would see Niebuhr. And Barack Obama said that he was very influenced by Reinhold Niebuhr. And you'd see it come out. We have to do this, even though it won't be perfect, and even though there'll be disagreements, and even though it's not going to work totally, but we have to do this. That was often on his policies, would recognize the reality of original sin and Niebuhr's reminder of that.
You've stated that he is the most impactful theologian in U.S. history.
Yeah, I say that and I believe that. And on the 25th anniversary of Time magazine, they put him on the cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a theologian without a doctorate.
It was 1948.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and that's quite a tribute. And it's commonly said that he is, the most impactful. He certainly got a lot of press. He ran for office one time early in his career. try to put into practice some of his things. But the evolution is what's interesting. He goes from being a socialist pacifist to becoming a Christian realist, which he then applied to everything. And I think we could use a good dose of him this year. He's not in now. He's not in favor, and people don't quote him much after Barack Obama did and mentioned him a lot, and Martin Luther King. But the idea of compromise. We're not going to get a perfect bill out of Congress on immigration, but to do nothing is not an option. That's the worst thing we can do, according to Niebuhr. So what you got to do is get the best thing possible and go for that. I mean, there's no doubt where he would be in a lot of the arguments, say on concretely on immigration. No, do what you can do, and then we could build on that later on.
Well, a lot of application for the insights that you've shared today about Reinhold Niebuhr, and thanks for providing a context for us. This has really been very engaging, so thank you.
Maybe somebody will take Reinhold Niebuhr seriously and read his Moral Man and Immoral Society and think about Christian realism and apply it to the world we live in today. We could use a good dose of it in our political world.
For sure. Thank you, Father Basic.